Thank you, Simon. And thank you, Judith, for bringing our reading. That's a first for Judith to do our reading. So well done. She's ticking off a whole load of firsts. So really, really encouraged by that. Before we look at this passage together, let me just remind you, as Christine did earlier, a couple of things. Our young people are going to be sharing tonight. They've been leading our service and they'll be sharing about what's happened at Soul Survivor. It'd be great to hear some of their testimony and things that God's been doing. So do come along, be part of that, encourage our young people. I know many people say it's great to see our young people growing in their faith. Well, come along and encourage them even more in their faith tonight. Also, if you are a new person, you've been coming to this church for a little while, you should have received a newcomer's buffet invitation. We would love to know whether you're coming. So please, please, please let us know as soon as possible. I know summer is just behind us and people are just gathering back again, but please let us know today so we can make arrangements. And that also goes for the worship event on the 30th. We've got Geraldine Lattie. She's costing us quite a lot of money. Very gifted, able trainer in worship, music and so forth. So anyone who's involved with the music or the worship of this church, we'd love you to be at that service. We've been communicating that for some months now for the 30th. If you're not involved but you'd like to be involved, come and talk to me because you could get an invite as well. So it's not a limit on how many can come to that. So talk to me afterwards. We'd love to have you on board as well, if you're thinking that may be something I can serve the Lord in. So let's turn to this passage. And I thought we came to an end of a series last week and we start a new series next week. So it was great to have the dedication service in the middle because it gave me an opportunity to kind of think about some parenting issues and what Scripture has to bring to bear on parenting issues. And so I've entitled this, The Peaceful Home. The peaceful home. I don't know what your home life is like in terms of family life, or as you reflect back to the years that have gone, how peaceful was your home? You know, I grew up with two brothers, mum and a dad, and a dog. It wasn't particularly a peaceful home. There were plenty of arguments, occasionally there were fights, there was all kinds of stuff going on. There was quite often discipline taking place. Things were noisy, things were frantic, things were often stressful, things were often argumentative, and it was rarely peaceful. Well, I think it was peaceful when everyone left the house. That was about the only time the house became peaceful. Well, I thought you might enjoy, and my apologies if you do not like Michael McIntyre, but I thought you might enjoy just a little clip. We join him halfway through a rant about family life, particularly moaning about those who don't have children and those that do. So enjoy this for a few minutes.
You childless people, you have no idea. Driving, you go driving. You drive in cars, don't you? Driving along, yay! What's the biggest drama you have to put up with? Oh, it's a bit chilly. Oh, put the blower on. Oh, that's nice now. Oh, look, they've opened a new Carluccio. We should go there. We could go there any night. We could go there any night. Oh, what's this song? I love this one. Freedom! Freedom! I strap my children into the car. I work out what'll cut off the blood supply. Then I ease it a bit. Stay there! We try and behave normally. Oh, what's this song? It's the wheels on the bus.
Again! Again! Look,
there's a new Carluccio's there. We will never go there. I was checking my children in the rearview mirror to see that they're safe. We're on the motorway, okay? I look, you just angle it to check that they're both okay because, you know, you're looking after them. Neither of them were there. They had both wound the windows down and had their heads on the motorway out of the window.
Yay!
Both of them, either side.
Yay!
My wife and I just lost it. Get out! They can't hear us. They're having the times of their lives.
Yay!
Motorway, going 80 miles an hour to stick my head out of my window to try and communicate with my child. Get in the car!
What are you saying?
My wife's doing it too.
Get in the car! What is it, Mummy?
All four of us had our heads out of the window. Me Meanwhile, a childless couple is driving past. Oh, look at the kids. I'd love to start a family one day. You have no idea what you're talking about. Sleeping. Sleeping at night. This is how people without children. Yeah, most nights, yeah. Good night, darling. Good night. Good night. Sometimes you go, sleep well, and the other one goes, I will. That's how cocky, how arrogant you are. I will, I know I will. Good night, darling. Have a good sleep. Good night. It's been a long time since my wife and I said good night to each other, okay? Now we just go, good luck. All through the night, they're screaming, Daddy, Daddy, that Robbie, Robbie! Sometimes they just wake up wide awake in the middle of the night. I'm asleep, it's like 2 o'clock in the morning. I wake, you know, and sometimes you just, you don't realise it, but you sort of half open your eyes. Sometimes when you're asleep, I half open my eyes, my son is in my face. And, what the hell are you doing here? What time is it? What time is it? 2 o'clock in the morning, what do you want?
I want to go to school.
Go to school? What are you talking about? It's to go back to bed. I've got my shoes on. You do, you found your shoes. I fixed my jacket. What are you doing? It's 2 o'clock in the morning, you idiot! Go to bed! Where's Ozzy? He's by the front door. He's never been there in his life! It's 2 in the morning! I have no idea.
Well, is your family life like that? Do you have peace in your home, or is it more like the McIntyre household, where I'm sure it's been a bit extreme, but actually it can feel like that, can't it? In our homes, it can feel like this thing called having children. I don't know if you've thought about this, Gary and Natasha. Probably, obviously not, but this thing, having children, may sound like an idyllic thing, but once they arrive, suddenly you realise the huge responsibility, but also the stress that it causes upon us. Well, actually, Scripture, I think, is quite helpful in terms of helping us learn what it is to be good parents, but also to be good husbands and wives to each other. And I've chosen this passage in Colossians that was read to us, just a really simple little passage. We've had lots of long passages recently, but this is a really simple little passage that just highlights four little things that help us, I believe, in terms of our homes. Now, it's very easy to look at this passage, and of course the first words were, wives submit to their husbands, and everyone go, whoa, I wonder what Josh's got to say about that this morning, without actually recognising that Paul is not writing this in terms of giving people roles within a household. He's writing it because he wants us to relate well. It's not about roles, it's about relationship. And actually, I want to put the first two together and then the second two together. Wives and husbands. I want to hold that together as one command, if you want. Wives and husbands, submit yourselves to each other. Love each other. Do not be harsh to each other, because it is fitting in the Lord to be that way. And then to look at children and parents together. It says fathers, the Greek is fathers, but the father role was particularly the disciplinarian role of the house. But that's, in our culture, it's mum and dad. It's a parenting role. And I want to hold those two together, of children obeying parents, but also draw out some really very, very practical things. And I think there's about, what is it, there's 4 plus 5, that's 9. There's 9 different practical things, 4 in the first one and 5 in the next one. And we're going to move through these fairly quickly. But I'm not going to really kind of unpack this passage in a sense. I just want to bring some real application for you to consider in your homes. If you're not married or if you don't have children, then you may have the joy of having grandchildren, you may have the joy of having children at some point, or just friends who have children, or just the way that we relate to each other. All these things can be applied in that way. So the first thing I want to say to wives and husbands, partners together, that I think can be drawn out of this passage, and that I think is absolutely key in life generally, in a close relationship, is one, believe in each other. Believe in each other. When we do marriage preparation, I say we, when Sue and I do marriage preparation, one of the things that we encourage the marriage couple to consider is, do they really believe in each other? Do they look at each other and do they look and think, actually, I believe in this woman. She is the greatest most fantastic, wonderful woman in the world. Now, those of you who are married, just think about your wives for a minute. Do you steal? Because there is a point when that is true, isn't it? There's a point when you look at this woman across the room and nothing can distract you from her beauty, from her wonder, from wanting to be close to her, to get to know her. You've fallen in love at first sight. Did it happen like that? Didn't quite happen like that for me, but I remember you're meeting Sue for the first time and being absolutely fascinated by this woman and finding myself in a place where actually it was very difficult to get her out of my head. She was the greatest, the most wonderful, the most beautiful, incredible person on the planet. Is that true still today? Well, I want to say it has to be true in our marriages. We have to believe in each other. I have to be the greatest fan of my wife. And wives, you have to be the greatest fan of your husbands. You have to tell them that they're great, even when they're not. You have to tell them how wonderful they are, even when they're not wonderful. You have to build them up. They need to be encouraged in so many different areas. We're just little boys still, looking for our mums to say, you're great, we love you so much. And we still need that to some extent, not completely, but to some extent, we need to know our wives believe in us. Believe in us. Second point is place each other first. Now, this sounds really obvious, doesn't it? Sounds absolutely obvious. I mean, Paul is talking to the wives and the husbands. I think it applies to both. When you go to Ephesians, it definitely applies to both. He kind of summarizes the whole passage in Ephesians by saying, submit to each other. He says to wives, submit to your husbands. And I think you could apply it, husbands, submit to your wives. If he says love your wives, is that not submission? Love is submission, isn't it? Part of love is submission. That we would put them first. That we would serve them. That we would think about their needs. How can I serve my husband? How can I serve my wife? What are their needs? Have you actually asked yourself recently, what is the need of my partner at this moment in time? And how can I help meet the need, that need? Many of you may have heard of this book. It's called The Five Love Languages by Gary Chapman. If you've not heard of it, it's worth a good read. It's one of these books that costs quite a lot of money and there isn't much in it, but still worth the read. So what I'm saying, it won't take you long to read it. I'm not saying it's worthless. But actually, it's one of those books that you can just read the contents page and probably get the point. But you can go in further depth by reading the whole book. He suggests that each person has a different language of love. And one of the things that we need to do as partners is to learn what is the love language of our partner. What is the thing that helps them to know that we love them? Not just the words, I love you. That's easy, isn't it? You know, as you're going to sleep, saying, like Michael McIntyre might do, good luck, and by the way, I love you, and hitting the pillow. That's kind of easy. I'll tell you what also is easy, buying flowers and giving flowers. That's easy. How do we really love each other? And what is the thing that helps that person, that individual, know that we love each other? He suggests there are five major languages of love. There might be others. So don't just bolt into one of these. He says words of affirmation for some people is so important. Actually, for a lot of men, that is so important. That they hear words of affirmation when people come and say, and their wives particularly say, you are good. You did that well. Thank you. Gratitude to, I occasionally would paint, Sue's not here today, so I can say some things. I would do some DIY, and I'd look, step back, and I think, wow, when Sue comes in, she's going to be so proud of me. She's going to say, darling, you're wonderful. Oh, I love you so much. Thank you for painting the wall. And she comes in, and I'm all hopeful. I'm waiting for her to tell me how much she loves me. And she comes up to the wall, and she says, you missed a bit. How many wives are like that? And I say to her, what about all the bits I got? You know, what about all that? No, you missed that bit. It's not good enough. Words of affirmation are so crucial. Receiving gifts for some people. Oh, sorry, missed one out. Quality time for many women. Quality time, or just time with their husbands and their partners. Having time together is absolutely crucial. And sometimes it's just sitting there thinking, why am I watching Poldark? Why would I do that? I'm reminding myself that it's actually not about Poldark. It's about actually sitting with my wife as she enjoys Poldark. Yeah, that could be misinterpreted, can't it? Receiving gifts, moving on quickly. Receiving gifts. For some, just receiving gifts to know someone has thought about them, gone and purchased a gift, brought it, packaged it, handed it to them in a special moment, is a way that they know I'm loved. I'm loved. Acts of service, where someone serves the person. Says, look, I'll do that for you. Let me carry that. Let me do that. Let me get that done for you. For some people, that's such an important aspect of life, to know that they're loved. And for others, it's physical, intimate touch. That they would know the hug, the touch, the moments of physical intimacy together as a couple. These things allow us to know, not just to hear, but to know that we are loved. Next one is that we listen to each other. I was going to put talk to each other. Because often we will say that time and time again in marriage preparation, we will say to couples, you need to talk about this. And you need to come back to this time and time again. Keep talking to each other. But as I thought about it, actually this the wrong terminology. Listen to each other. Spend time listening. That's submission, isn't it? Isn't that love? That we would listen to each other. How often do we listen, really listen to each other? And there are moments, aren't there? There are times in our married lives or our lives together when actually we're not listening. We're too busy doing our thing. And we haven't got time to listen to what the other person is thinking or actually, probably more importantly, feeling. This is particularly important for men to hear. Women need time for you to listen to them. But actually, let me turn it round. Guys, you need time for them to listen to you as well. They need to know your feelings. They need to know your emotions. They need to know how you're responding to certain things that are going on in your life. Listen to each other. Talk about issues. Talk about Jesus. Talk about Christian growth. Talk about thoughts and feelings. Talk about the family issues. Talk about the decisions to be made. Talk about how you can be a better... Here's a question for you. Go home. Here, I challenge you. Go home and ask your wife or husband, how can I be a better husband? How could I be a better wife to you? And don't get defensive when they begin to respond. Listen and learn together. Here's another really tricky question, but I'll throw it out and we move on very quickly because you all get nervous and twitchy in your seats. But yeah, ask each other, how are we doing sexually? How's our sexual relationship together? And our finances? These are all crucial questions and things that we need to spend time thinking and listening and talking to each other about. And the fourth thing is this, be sacrificial for each other. Give up stuff for each other. Give up the things. See, so often we get so individual. And it's all about what I want to do. You know, I want to watch the Formula One. I want to watch Match of the Day. And sometimes it's stop and say, what do I give up for my wife? What do I give up for my husband? What do I put aside that I really value and love doing, but actually this person is more important than that person. To give up something says something remarkable to a person. To be prepared to say, no, I'm not going to do that today because I just want to be with you is so crucial. And that's love, isn't it? That's submission, isn't it? That we would sacrifice ourselves for each other. Why is this so important? Because I was meant to be talking about parenting, not marriage. Well, let me say this. I don't think you can separate the two. I think when you have a healthy, good marriage, you will have a healthy, peaceful family, and your kids will know that they are cared for, secure, and safe. One of the things I've said, and I keep saying it, so you get it eventually. The greatest gift that you ever give to your children is to love your husband or your wife. Not to love them, although that's important. Love them, of course, you've got to love them. But when you love your wife, when you love your husband, your children, even when they're older, it is a precious and special gift. And they will know that they are loved in that context of love. They will know they were created in a context of love. And they will know that love continues within that family. So what's the knock-on effect for children then, parents and children? It's huge in terms of marriage. But Paul goes on to say, children, obey your parents in every way. Well, we're all saying amen to that. I did wonder, actually, whether to say to Chris, I think you better bring your young people in for this service. And so I tested this with my son, and he said, no way, Dad, we are not coming in. So that's fair enough. And he knows better than me nowadays anyway, because he's 17. So Paul says, children, obey your parents in everything, for this pleases the Lord. Fathers, do not embitter your children, or they become discouraged. Let's not separate these things. Let's hold these two things together, and let's draw out some things, actually, that we as parents might learn from both these things. If we expect our children to obey us, respect us, let me ask you the question, point one of this group, do you respect your parents? Do you respect your parents? Because if you don't respect your parents, if you don't listen to them, value them, appreciate them, give them time, hold some of the things. Yes, okay, different generation, different times, but actually hold some of the principles of which they hold in their life and actually value those things. Why would your children ever value the things that you offer to them? Let's turn the thing around. It's easy to look at that and say, yes, my children should obey me. Paul says, son, you should obey me. But what can we do to help them respect and value that context of parenting? Respect your own parents. Respect the other generation, the generation that before, the elders, and our society doesn't do that. But perhaps we as Christians in Christian families and marriage should hold that with great esteem. It's very biblical from the command that says, honor your father and mother so that you may live long in the land the Lord your God has given you. Second one is this. Remember, however, who the parent is. Remember who the parent is. And so often in our society, we are handing over very quickly the responsibility of living to our children. We're going to show you another clip that is quite humorous in some ways, but also a tinge of, oh, that's interesting. You will see a toddler. You at first will not understand what he's saying, but the point will become clear as the clip goes on.
Listen to me. Like I do this all the time, and if I go out at the house with the little girl, Matthew has his toys, and then Matthew has all his toys.
Okay, but I have to yell at you guys.
Okay, Linda, listen.
Okay, what?
Like everything they do at this house, they can't trust everything at Grandma's house.
Okay.
Okay, then what?
Then you're not listening to me.
Then you're not listening to me.
I asked you not to do something.
Linda, but listen to me. Look it. If you do something, if you get that out, that birthday off, you're going to break it.
Okay, but I'm letting you know
but
that you cannot.
Know. Linda, no, Linda, I'm. Lick it.
You're not listening to me.
Linda.
Listen to me now.
Listen to me now.
No, you're not listening. I said no cupcakes, and you try to get cupcakes, and you try to ask Grandma.
Linda,
didn't you?
Linda, lick it. If we do something right out this, if we get closer, you can't even get them. You're going to burn your butt.
What's going to burn your butt? No. You and Kevin don't listen, so I have to give both of you guys pow-pows in your butt.
But Linda, but Grandma... But Papa's gonna give me peppers in the butt.
No, he's not. Yeah. I have to. You don't want me to hit Kevin, or you don't want him to spank you?
No.
Why?
Because anybody wants to spank me.
Then I have to spank Kevin.
But he's my little pop-ups.
He's your little pop-ups, but he doesn't listen.
But Lumba, honey, look at this. Right now, you can't do anything if we can't get everything out of the wall. If we're gonna break everything down.
I'm not breaking anything down. I'm just letting you know
Lumba, you cannot have cupcakes for dinner. Linda, like this thing, and it will belong to you. Anything, you can't get anything.
I'm done arguing with you.
I'm not arguing with you.
You need to listen to the things that I say because I'm the mom and I'm the adult.
Listen to me. All the time you get them,
arguing with you.
Linda, I'm done arguing with you.
So I hope you picked up enough of that to get the kind of flavour. And when he's saying licking, he's saying look at me, because apparently she was laughing so much when she was recording it that she wasn't actually looking at him. So she's saying look at me. And Linda is the mother, so he's using, and he calls her honey and stuff like that. And apparently that's what the father calls her. I mean, it's quite amusing, but it's quite scary as well. But how often actually do we see that in our own homes? And we need to remember who the parent is. Why is that important? You can discuss that in your small groups if you engage with this later. Why is that important? It's important because that child has had 3 years' experience of life. How many years of experience had Linda had, and her husband, and the grandparents of life? Far more. But it's important because actually God looks at the parent and says, I make you responsible for these children. You're responsible for them. And that means it's you make the good decisions, the fun decisions, the decisions that they want you to say, yeah, we're going off to the beach or we're going off to do this today. But also you have to confront the difficult issues in life as parents. You cannot hand that over to children. And in society, we're handing too much over to our children and saying, not enough. No. This isn't happening. This is not taking place in this way, however hard that may be. And it starts at the smallest of things when they're babies. Putting them in their bed and making sure that they go to their bed, not your bed, is actually a key thing that begins in the discipline of life for a child. And I remember when we had to put Tim in his bed and, you know, he was crying, we had to learn the lesson of soothing him, calming him down, and then leaving him again, knowing it was going to scream the house down for a while. But gradually, the discipline of life began to enter into his life. We are the parents. We have responsibility. It's a huge responsibility. And dare we hang that on our children? That's wrong, isn't it? It's wrong to hang that huge responsibility of life upon them. We take that ourselves. And we pray to God, God, give us the strength to be good parents. Let me move on. Reflect on your motives. Reflect on your motives. I remember a lady, when I was a young person, about 18, 19, I remember going to this youth leader's house, and she had just had children. She had two young children. And I remember saying something like this. She said, I was disciplining my children. I was shouting at my children at one point, and I suddenly asked myself this question, why am I shouting at my children? And that question has stuck in my head, because she went on to say that when she analysed it, it wasn't because they'd done anything wrong. It's just that she was grumpy, she was tired, she had a bad day, she was in a bad place, and she took it out, her frustrations, on her children. And actually often, you know, we have to take responsibility as parents, but also we have to say, what is going on in my life at this point in time? Why am I motivated in the way of being frustrated? There are moments when I can get home and I can suddenly feel kind of annoyance. You know, you get through the door and shoes are scattered around the place and comics and all kinds of mess. And you kind of go, yeah! And the first person, be it wife or child, that appears kind of gets it, don't they? But then if you kind of step back and say, well, what's going on? Have they been bad? Not really. Just haven't tidied up. Actually, I've just come from a difficult meeting that didn't go very well. I've had a bad day at work, or someone cut me up on the way home. And actually, it's not anything to do with them. And as parents, we need to learn to be responsible with our own motives, our own emotions, our own things that drive us, our own desires to support us. Our love of our children can't be feeding our needs. Our love of our children must be looking to their needs. Fourth one. Is this a fourth one? Yes, it is. Nearly there. Fourth one is to refuse just to correct our children. And this is a bit of a bugbear of mine, and those that have been in the church for a while will know that I've said this time and time again. But again, I think we live in a society where we are so good at telling our children, both at school but also in the home, what they need to do better at, rather than what they're achieving. And we need to more often say to our children, you're great, you're wonderful, that was fantastic. I really love what you did there. Putting your arm around them and saying, we love you. Yes, correcting them when they go wrong, but actually let our correction be less and let our encouragement of our children be more. Parenting is not just about correcting. It's about encouraging. It's about finding our children's strengths. And our children's strengths are not the same as ours. Can I say that? The children, although they kind of look like us a little bit, and they kind of act like us a little bit, and sometimes we see some of the weaknesses in us. This is the problem. We see the weaknesses in us in them. I see much of that, actually, in my son. And I think, he says to me, how did you know? And I went, I kind of, in the back of my mind, thinking, I was one of you once. You know, I was there once, but I didn't tell him that. You know, I know what it is to be a young boy or a young child or whatever it might be. I know what it is to be there, but it's easy to see our own weaknesses in them and try to save them from those weaknesses rather than actually seeing the strengths that are uniquely theirs. Uniquely theirs. And to say to them, you're great. You're wonderful. We believe in you. Going back to that belief. Belief in your partner, but belief in your children. Do you believe in your children? It's a terrible thing to say to our children, you're useless. I mean, I sometimes hear parents telling their children, oh, you're useless. You're bad. You're wicked. Why would we say that to our children? I want to say to them, you're special. You're gifted. All children are gifted. This talented and gifted thing in school, what a load of nonsense. All children are gifted and talented. It's just about finding what that thing is that makes them to be who they are. Let's refuse to just correct. Make sure we encourage our children often and regularly. And let's lastly retain love at all costs. Never pull back from love from your children. Love them constantly. This thing about fathers, do not embitter your children, is so important. It's very easy to frustrate, annoy, provoke your children. But if we allow love to always be the constant, constantly loving, constantly loving, ask yourself, am I being loving in this moment? Even in the moment of discipline and correction, am I being loving? Is it for their best? And let them know. Don't just tell them that you love them. The other day, I was thinking to myself, you know, I've had a busy summer. Busy summer in terms of mission stuff and church stuff, holidays. Yes, I spent a bit of time with my son. But since he'd been back from Soul Survivor, hadn't really had much time. We've had an extension, lots of decorating going on, lots of things to get done. And I thought to myself, I got up on Tuesday and I thought to myself, you know, I haven't spent a lot of time, but Sue would love it if I got the decorating done in the kitchen. And then I thought to myself, but Tim would love it if I took him to play golf. And I hadn't spent time with Tim for a while. Actually, to be fair, I would love it to go and play golf as well. And so I thought to myself, I rang up and we booked a round of golf. And Tim and I went and played golf in the rain on Tuesday, for a bit in the rain. It wasn't all in the rain. But it was just a great thing. We had a free buggy as well. It was just great fun. And we need to do those things. It's not just about just saying I love you. It's about living it out with your children. Allowing that relationship to develop and to grow. Yes, there'll be moments of confrontation. There'll be hardship. There are moments when it's really difficult as a parent. But never pulling out love. I've said this before. You know, always have a bed for your child. You know, however old they are, always have a bed. Always say, look, there's a place here for you. You never say to your child, do you know what? If that's the way you think, if that's what you think about us, you could jolly well do your own cooking, your own washing up. In fact, actually, you could pack your bags and get out of here. And don't we want to say that? And then moments you think, that's what I want to do. If that's how much you don't care about us, get out of our building. I pay for the mortgage. I do this. I do that. Never get to that place. Always say, however frustrated I might be with you in this moment, there's always a home for you. Okay, maybe not a physical bed, but there's always a place. There's always a home. There's always a place of love where you might come and know that you are loved in this place. Wives, submit to your husbands as is fitting to the Lord. Husbands, love your wives and do not be harsh with them. Children, obey your parents in everything, for this pleases the Lord. Parents, do not embitter your children or they will become discouraged. I think if we apply some of these things, I believe we will find more peace than sometimes we do in our homes. Amen.